Talking on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn. Sooner or later, gotta
cut you down. Welcome to Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you statewide and live on Civic Media. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits, and all points of view are welcome. And remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless until you know history, going right to the front lines of history in the making, a lot of it being made. But one of the largest stories, most important stories, the attack on American servicemen on that base in Jordan that killed three terrific army members, wounded more than 40 more, Apparently what happened, President Biden spoke very well on it today. What happened was the Iranians apparently have trained some of their proxies to evade our air defense systems by doing a couple of things. One of them coming in very low. If you come in very, very low, it's very hard to pick up on an air defense system. But the other one is we have our own drones that we send out from these bases, from our bases. When they return to our base, if they aren't used, if they aren't suicide drones, in other words, if they aren't used to just blow up, the Iranians have trained some of their proxies to follow our drones back and land at approximately the same time, so our air defense systems might confuse them as friendly drones. And one of them came in and blew up right near a place where our troops were sleeping, killed three people, and wounded more than 40 more. The question is, what do we do? We have about 3,000 troops in Jordan. We have about 2,500 in Iraq, about 900 in Syria. If you look at the whole region in the Middle East, we probably have about 40,000 troops. These people are vulnerable. We do have air defense systems. We have an aircraft carrier nearby. We have air power, sea power. We have Navy SEALs. We have special forces. But it's one of the things where if we're not waging an offensive war, in other words, not putting them on the defensive, they just sit and plot on how to attack us. And this has got to change. Now, President Biden gave an address today talking about this, saying what heroes these soldiers were. He's going to be meeting with their parents this weekend, or in the next couple of days, actually. And he wouldn't lay out what he was going to do to retaliate, but he did say that he'd already consulted with the NSA and his Defense Department, and he's made up his mind. Now, they range all the way from simply striking back at the proxies who did it and killing a couple of them to hitting sites right in Iran. And you know, in 1988 under Reagan, we did hit Iranian ships in the Persian Gulf. Nobody wants to start a war. But when you have been attacked and your soldiers killed, they've started a war. This business about, oh, well, you know, Iran didn't tell them to do this particular one. They just gave them weapons and trained them how to do it and then sat back and grinned. That doesn't cut it with me and doesn't cut it with anybody else. The other thing to keep in mind about Iran, they have drone factories that they're using to supply Russia in Ukraine, to supply Hamas, to supply Hezbollah, to supply in Yemen, the Houthis, and to supply their proxies in Iraq and Syria. Some obvious sites to hit would be their Navy and their Air Force, their airfields, their drone factories. I know of two of them. There may be others. The CIA knows where they all are. And frankly, their nuclear facilities. The nuclear facilities are underground. We'd have to use bunker busters. And we have other technologies we can go after them. But at some point, we have got to hit back in Iran, in my opinion. Now, if we hit back on Tehran itself, on civilian targets, if we hit back on their legislature, such as it is, their holy men who run the country and kill them. I mean, at some point, that's a full-scale war. But when your troops are killed, they've got to expect that they're going to pay the piper. They've got to expect that they're going to pay the piper. The other thing is to ramp up significantly the sanctions. We have sanctioned them, but we haven't sanctioned them the way we sanctioned North Korea. There are degrees of sanctions. The ultimate sanction would be a naval blockade. So nothing goes in and out, no oil comes out, can't make any money. That is something that we should consider. There is a bill pending in the Senate, passed the House overwhelmingly by 2/3, to sanction their oil and prevent its shipment. That's pending in the Senate and it's been held up. But even short of that, monetary sanctions, sanctions against individual businesses there, hitting them on secondary sanctions. When the Turks and others evade our sanctions and trade with them, then you sanction the Turkish banks that do it. That's all on the table. Biden didn't say what he would do, but I think he has to do more than just hit back on these particular proxies. These particular proxies are simply lowlifes who hang out there. They have no purpose. They have no culture. They have absolutely no goals other than, in the aggregate, they all want an international caliphate and the elimination of Israel and Europe and everything else. Good luck with that one. That's going to take a long time in the future. But in the short run, they're just in business basically to murder any Western interests. And when there's nothing around for them to murder, they murder each other. Sunnis attack Shiites, Shiites attack Sunnis. Very important to keep this out of the United States. Very, very important not to let this poison come into the United States. And I've never really, quite frankly, understood how in our immigration policy, we kind of blithely open our doors to immigration from countries that hate us. And not only do they hate us, they rally in the streets and shout, death to America, death to Israel. They have a Holocaust humor day where they taunt. We don't want this. We don't want any of that in this country. Very sadly, there's not unanimity among our people in this country on even sticking up for our military. I've talked in the past about how the Republican Party wouldn't even promote our officers for 10 months and consistently has voted to shut the government down, which would mean not paying our troops who are being killed over there. And then at the same time, at the last minute, you know, 2 hours before the deadline, ginning together some kind of contrived bill. But there's a lot worse that they are doing. And I'm going to give you two examples. And these are examples of something that Donald Trump said and that unbelievably Marjorie Taylor Greene just said. Let me start with Donald Trump. There's a group, a veterans group ad that just got put out, and it features three Gold Star families. And these Gold Star families, obviously the Gold Star, what that means is they lost a son or a daughter in combat, or I suppose a spouse, but more likely a son or a daughter. And they called out Trump for having referred to veterans as losers and suckers. Losers and suckers, and that's what he did. When he went to Normandy, supposedly he was going to go to Normandy to honor our troops. It was raining, so he decided not to go. But then when he went to Arlington with John Kelly, he's a former four-star Marine general, John Kelly. John Kelly lost a son in Afghanistan. He was killed, Marine second lieutenant, killed in combat, killed in combat. John Kelly, Trump's chief of staff, is a Gold Star father. And they went and looked at the graves, and Trump turned to Kelly, who had lost his son in Afghanistan, and said, pointing to the graves, what was in it for them? And he referred to them as losers and suckers. Our veterans. This is the guy who lied about having bone spurs and kept them out of Vietnam. And there are people in the Republican Party who think he would be a good commander-in-chief. And that is, frankly, disgusting. And I'm glad these Gold Star families are doing it. But Marjorie Taylor Greene, there's nothing, she cheapens everything she touches, cheapens everything she talks about. And here's what she just did. Right after the three soldiers were killed, Marjorie Taylor Greene joked about it just now, joked about three GIs getting killed and said, quote, "I think that these reservists would rather be guarding our southern border and protecting our homeland than tragically getting killed." That's what she says. If you saw the interview with the mother and the father of the Brianna, a terrific specialist in the Army who was one of the ones killed, a woman, early 20s, and you could see, you could tell the love of the mother for the daughter and the father for the daughter, and they were crying. And the mother said, "I wished I'd talked to her before she left and told her that I love her and that she's not alone. That she's not alone." And the clown Marjorie Taylor Greene thought this is funny. The clown Marjorie Taylor Greene said, quote, "I think those reservists would rather be guarding our southern border and protecting our homeland than tragically getting killed," end quote. And the presidential candidate she's supporting, Donald Trump, called veterans who were killed suckers, losers, and, quote, "what's in it for them," end quote, to his own chief of staff who had lost his own son, a second lieutenant in the Marine Corps in combat in Afghanistan. The thing that enrages me, frankly, more than anything about some of this Republican perfidy is the coldness, the joking, and the lying about our own veterans, and we could never forget that. Okay, we're going to step away for a moment. We're going to come back shortly, and we have Donald Trump dissolves 106 of his 521 companies to avoid scrutiny by a special master. Coming up.
Backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
The Shaw, WAUK. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected to your local community.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Before we talk about Donald Trump, there was breaking news. You've probably seen it. I want to talk to you a little bit about the law behind it. Alex Murtaugh, the murderer down in South Carolina, he killed his son, his own son. He killed his own wife. And apparently there was some evidence. I remember some tape recording that he just shot his son right in the face, his own son. He brought a motion. He got life in prison, of course. He brought a motion to throw out the verdict and give him a new trial because of misconduct by a court clerk. And I will tell you what that was about, and also it's because there's a lot of misconceptions floating around out there about what the standards are for something like that. The clerk was named Rebecca Hill, and she had decided she wanted to write a book about the trial, even in advance, and was all starry-eyed and thought that a guilty verdict would really help sell the book. So apparently, when she had contact with the jury, remember something, nobody's supposed to have contact with the jury. The lawyers can't chum up to them and, you know, try to talk to him in the hallway. You can't do that. You can't go near a juror. But they obviously have court staff that are around them. You know, the court will say, "All rise, take the jury out for lunch." You know, there's a bailiff and somebody else walks out with them, escorts them to wherever they're going. So they do have a chance to interact, and they're usually well-trained. And they're told, don't even think about commenting on the case. Don't even think about commenting on the case. Well, this clown, this clerk, Rebecca Hill, would whisper initially, apparently, things like, don't be fooled, which is kind of ambiguous, except it was before Murtaugh was going to speak. And then she also said other things that were, there wasn't evidence, it wasn't anything of that nature, but it's pretty clear that she didn't like Murtaugh and thought he was guilty. This is all presented to the judge, and the judge interviewed all 12 jurors. 11 of them said either that she hadn't said it to them, in other words, they hadn't heard it, or if they did hear it, didn't make any difference at all. They went entirely on the evidence. The 12th juror was ambivalent and said, well, you know, I didn't know what to do, and the other jurors pressured me, and so I went guilty like them because I didn't want to sit there forever. Now, here's the deal. Somebody who's not used to trying cases might look at that and say, well, unless the trial's perfect, let's redo it. Well, no. No. It's not uncommon for people. And Murtaugh, in this case, just had this as a gift put in his lap. But I don't know if you remember the El Chapo trial. He's the drug murderer from Mexico, tried in New York, convicted, and now he's spending life in prison, in a maximum security prison in the United States. But a juror came forward afterwards, in my view, clearly bribed, and said, I didn't obey the judge's instructions. I followed the case every day. I talked to people. I'd made up my mind in advance about some things. And it was kind of a textbook on, you know, the kind of elements you need to overturn a verdict. Judges are used to that kind of thing. If you had a new trial, every time somebody, there was some imperfection in the trial, you would never, ever, ever have a conclusive trial if you had a wealthy defendant or somebody that knew his way around a law firm. So they're very skeptical about it. And it would have to be something very, very serious, not a law clerk shooting their mouth off. So, for instance, obviously, if somebody had evidence that or had knowledge that an exhibit was fraudulent or forged, that kind of thing, absolutely. But in something like this, where you have a clerk who wants to write a book and is kind of full of herself and kind of publicity speaking, here's what the judge said. In denying his right to a new trial, today that happened just before we went on the air, denying Alex Murtaugh, who murdered his wife and his daughter in South Carolina, the judge said, foolish and fleeting comments by a publicity-hungry clerk do not warrant a new trial. And the judge was absolutely right. She was absolutely right. She hit the nail on the head. You can't do it in every case. And this was one that, in my view, wasn't even close. So I was very, very glad to see that that judge held the line. Because if you did another trial, it's a very long trial with a lot of evidence. And you remember Murtaugh testified in the first one, which frankly, I think he would have been convicted anyway. But it was terrible. His testimony salted it away. The jurors were kind of folding their arms, leaning away from him, thinking, you're flat out lying to me, you're a sociopath. And it was an incredible trial. I watched part of it on television. But if you're talking to people about trials, how you get a new trial, especially in a criminal case, it's a little more common in a civil case, although it's not common at all. But in a criminal case, there has to be extraordinary misconduct, usually by one of the lawyers, perhaps something wrong with the evidence, but just having a clerk shooting her mouth off because, well, what the heck, I want to write a book. That doesn't hack it. That does not hack it. And I was very, very glad in this case to see that that he didn't do it. You will see an allusion. There was a mystery subpoena in the House of Representatives that just went in to the Sergeant-at-Arms asking for documents. And initially, we didn't know what it was about. And suddenly, Mike Johnson goes, oh, sure, we'll give him the documents. And I was thinking, that's sort of weird because subpoenas to the House of Representatives, you know, you have conflicts there with an equal authority in the government. You know, you have a judge wanting him from the House of Representatives. I mean, there's a question there of comity, C-O-M-I-T-Y, meaning you have to be aware that this is an equal branch of government. The reason it turns out that there was so much alacrity in giving him these things is because the subpoena from the Department of Justice from a grand jury was for Cori Bush, whom the Republicans don't like. She's a representative from Missouri. And apparently the allegation was she had hired security because of threats against her. And there are threats against all members of Congress now. And there's nothing wrong with it. The Federal Election Commission said that is an appropriate use of campaign funds. So she hired a security firm, but her husband works for the security firm. But this whole business of when you can hire a company that your spouse works for is not uncommon in the Congress. So we're going to have to wait and see how that shakes out. A lot of news, weather coming up, and we are going to talk about how Trump is playing kind of fast and loose with his corporate forums to avoid paying his judgments coming up. Stay real close. Please, please, hear me. You're the most. Now you got me started.
It is going to be cloudy and drizzly with a few flurries possible at times here throughout the day today. Another dreary one with a high of 38, the wind northwest at 5 to 15. Gradual clearing tonight, 32. Tomorrow, mostly sunny and a bit warmer with a high right around 43. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 35.
The Todd Almost Show.
The immigration challenge in this country, as Jorge Ramos, the great author, likes to say, you can build as many and high walls and deep walls as you possibly want. But until you start addressing the problem within countries, people will keep coming. For all of our faults, people still look at America as that shining city on a hill and want to come here, and I believe that makes us stronger.
The Todd Almost Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
Keeping Southeast Wisconsin informed, engaged, and entertained. This is
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Going right to the line, Stephen of Green Bay, my friend. Thanks for calling, Stephen. What's in your mind today?
Good afternoon, Matt. I hope you are doing well. It's always great to hear you on an afternoon. I have a little bit of ranting to do, and I hope you can help me with this one. I'm a regular listener. So you know that I listen to all of your guys' shows on the Civic Media Network fairly regularly. And you hear about, you know, Trump and the shenanigans he's pulling and Derek Van Orden and the things he did and how he thinks he's going to run for the 3rd District of Wisconsin and get reelected. And it's just frustrating how these Republicans think that they can literally do whatever they want, up to and including killing people, and there's going to be no consequence, and they can just walk into an election year like there's nothing happening. But a Democrat comes out and says women should be able to choose what they should do with their own bodies, and you would think that they just bombed half of New York. It's absolutely ridiculous.
That's a good comment. And you know something, you put a finger on something that I think is profound. And that is that if you take a look at the program, and certainly on what I discuss on this show, and I think with some of my fellow hosts, there's an inordinate amount of talk about Trump. It's very negative, and I don't mean that in a sort of personal or pejorative way, but what he does criminal stuff. He has 91 indictments against him. He continuously lies and all of that. But relentlessly, all the oxygen in the room is going to Trump, even though for negative purposes. What I tried to do, and you frankly just jiggered my memory on it, is more frequently talk about what we do, and I'm a Democrat, let's face it, but what we do is, and what Biden does in particular, and I frequently do that on economic matters. For instance, we have the strongest recovery after the inflation crisis and the COVID crisis of any country in the world, certainly any industrial country in the world. Number two, the lowest unemployment. Three, the largest job creation under Biden in 2.5-3 years. His administration has presided over the creation of 14 million jobs. He didn't create them himself, of course not. But the economic climate that you are responsible for as a president, for influencing and promoting, does help to create them. A statistic I've used before, and I'm going to use it again right now, since 1989, the fall of the Berlin Wall, 98% of the new jobs created in the United States were created under Democratic presidents, 2% under the Republican presidents. And remember, that would be George H.W. Bush, George W. Bush, and Trump, 2%. But under Clinton, Obama, under Biden, 98%. Biden passed the CHIPS Act, and I say passed it. Obviously, Congress passed it, and he signed it. It wouldn't have gotten passed. It wouldn't have even got onto the floor if he weren't a master of the Senate. Senate rules. He's been there either as senator or vice president for most of 50 years, since 1972. Hard infrastructure, soft infrastructure, holding NATO together, reinforcing NATO, seeing NATO increase in numbers, Finland, for instance, coming in, Sweden shortly, providing aid to Ukraine, avoiding getting us in a war, creating a mini NATO in the Pacific, so that Japan, South Korea, Australia, Vietnam, the Philippines can band together with the United States and the UK and stop Chinese domination of the South China Sea. He's done remarkable things, but you know, good news good news doesn't get the same as attention as bad news. I mean, you know, many teams are named after, you know, the Pirates, the Raiders. No teams are named after the good guys. Well, there are the Saints, I guess. But I mean, by and large, people kind of exult in and pay attention to evil and bad stuff. I mean, you know, there was a tour of in Chicago of Al Capone's, you know, what he did in Chicago. Who does a tour of somebody who is the head of United Way down there and is giving money out to poor people? So we tend to be fascinated with criminals, and Trump is a criminal. I got to tell you something. When you practice law a long time, I've never heard of anyone who is indicted on 91 felonies in 4 separate courts with different judges and different prosecutors who is totally flat out innocent of all of them. It just doesn't happen. And you've seen 2 juries now in the defamation cases involving E. Jean Carroll coming back with very significant, very, very significant damages, $5 million and then $83.3 million. And the $83.3 million, what they said was, the closing argument was, whatever money you think it takes to make him stop it, humiliating her, attacking her, frightening her. There's a sadistic treatment, streak in Trump. So, and even now, I don't know if you know this, maybe you do, but he gets nailed for $5 million, gets nailed for $83.3 million. So it suddenly occurs to him, if he defames her again, there'll be another lawsuit. But you know what he just did? He posts on his Truth Social, reposts articles that other people wrote attacking her without comment. So his argument was, well, I didn't say anything. I just reposted it. If you want to sue somebody, sue them. Now, I'll tell you, as a defamation lawyer, I have represented media in defending defamation claims. I will say that if you relentlessly, as a pattern, just keep reposting things you said before, I think that is defamatory, but it's less clear. And who wants to have to go start a lawsuit every week? But this poor woman, E. Jean Carroll, gave an interview on Rachel Maddow last night. She had her two lawyers. She had Roberta Kaplan and a woman named Crowley, excellent lawyers. And she was elated, but also described how frightened she had been. She's a single woman, frail, 80 years old. What? She's walking around the street in New York with Trump and tens of millions of followers, giving her death threats, some of them. She got a pit bull, and she keeps a gun in her apartment, which in New York is very difficult. Most people don't do it. To continue to attack her sadistically like that is unbalanced. But, you know, I'm getting back into the same shtick. You know, I started talking with Stephen in Green Bay just now. Yeah, it's all about Trump. And then Van Norden's another piece of work. We have some very good candidates up against Van Norden. I think we're going to win. Van Norden's a guy that brings a loaded gun in an airport through a metal detector in Iowa. The rules don't apply to the guy. He's a guy who went to the insurrection, went up to the Capitol, used campaign money to pay his way. He's an insurrectionist. Folks in the 3rd District, I know him. There's a lot of good folks there. My nephew's graduate of UW-La Crosse. People don't go for that kind of stuff. Going back to the lines, Dick of Madison, my friend. Thanks for calling, Dick. What's in your mind today?
I saw some of that interview, too, and he's just so pathetic on every level. But, you know, after the first one last fall with Eugene Carroll, I remember reading something in one of the Eastern Pay, I think it was the New York Times, and she said basically it's not about the money because she's pretty well-to-do herself. And she said what it is about is just what you said, Matt. She wants her life back, and she wants to be left alone and don't have his crazies threatening her all the time. And I guess what I'm going to say here is if this guy opens his pie hole one more time about any of this, I'm going to be furious if they don't put him in jail immediately. Enforce this. It has to be done because he's just flying in the face of this. The poor woman, like you said, 80 years old, and she has to deal with this kind of nonsense. It's not right.
Right. No. Yeah. Excellent call, Dick. I couldn't agree more. Well, I'm going to talk about something that he's doing to hide his assets, and pay attention to this because it's very boring stuff normally, but everybody goes, I talk to people, they go, oh, well, he's got nailed for $83 million. Maybe he'll have to sell Trump Tower. Oh, well, Judge Engoron may fine him $370 million, so that's it for him. Well, not so quick. Just came out, there is a monitor put in charge of his properties. Remember, one of the judges did that to make sure he didn't try to hide assets. She just filed a report. Her name is Barbara Jones, former judge. Filed a report. He has 521 companies. He has already dissolved 106 of them. And when she asked for information on them, he waited 8 months. And she kept asking for it, 8 months. And then when it was all done and he shuffled the assets around, some skeleton type information, real little information. The parent of the 521 companies, that's called the parent company, is the Trump Organization. Now, Trump's attorneys attacked Barbara Jones for saying that what she said is misleading and disingenuous. Nothing misleading and disingenuous. She filed the report. You read the report. The judge accepted the report. You got to keep something in mind. The average person who's rich and crooked is not like you. They don't pay their bills. I had a case one time against a guy who owed money down in Arizona. I took his deposition, and he had a very large house, and we were going to foreclose on it. He had incorporated each room. The living room was a separate corporation. The dining room, the kitchen, the den. And each one was an LLC that had some member other than him. Him and one of his kids, this, that, and the other thing. And so untangling that almost requires separate lawsuits, foreclosure lawsuits against each room. And you see where I'm going with this. If you have 521 companies and you sneakily dissolved 106 of them and stonewalled the special monitor, what's very, very possible is if he gets nailed for $370 million and then $83 million, so call it $450 million. And I don't know what Engron's going to do. I mean, Engron's going to come out with some kind of a decision this week. It could be $350, it could be $270, it could be $50. I don't know what he's going to come out with. And Letitia James is also trying to get him barred in the real estate industry for life, which can also spill over into other states. But don't kid yourself that he's going to suddenly show up with a check for that kind of money. Don't kid yourself. What's going to happen is that assets are going to be shuffled among these companies. Some will be dissolved. Some of the companies will have investors, quote unquote, minority investors who have rights and weren't previously disclosed, and it'll take separate litigation. And this will go on and on. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Skullduggery in Georgia. Why does that not surprise me? Skullduggery in Georgia. The Republican House, overwhelmingly Republican, gerrymandered in Georgia, passed a bill yesterday revive a commission to discipline and remove Fannie Willis. They don't say that what it's for. It's just a commission to discipline and remove DAs. Well, I wonder who that would be. Can you name any other DA in Georgia that's been in the news? I can't. It passed 95-75, party line. Every Democrat against it, every Republican for it. It's House Bill 881. The Georgia Senate, the committee, did the same thing last week. Now, one thing to keep in mind that you may not remember is this happened last year, and what ended up happening was Kemp, the governor, signed it. But that bill had a provision in it that said the Supreme Court had to create rules for this commission. The Supreme Court said, we don't think we have the power to do anything with DAs except when it comes to the practice of law. Well, this time they took that provision out so the Supreme Court can't hold it up. Go to the lines. David of San Francisco, my friend. Thanks for calling, David. What's on your mind today?
Oh, thanks, Matt. I'm glad you're describing this because it's so obvious. This should be the simplest case that could ever be dealt with. You know, they have a tape recording of Donald Trump saying, oh, please, Secretary of State, give me, just steal me 12,000 votes. I'm just a poor. And so they are going out of their way spending Georgia tax dollars on every other kind of effort to make sure that Trump does not get prosecuted on a very simple, obvious case. And he doesn't even deny it. You know, he keeps claiming that he's got presidential immunity from prosecution, but he's not denying that he did it. And then, of course, it gets into the other layers of the corruption, you know, with, you know, the fake delegates to the Electoral College, that the state of Georgia has still never really removed all of those people from their positions of power. And when you start looking at the Republican Party that's gone out of their way to, you know, they're still fundraising. They're an official, you know, 501c4 organization or whatever their tax status is. They should have been yanked. The Secretary of State should have yanked their corporate charter. The Republican Party should have had their corporate charters yanked for being participants in an illegal operation like that. And the idea that a nonprofit status is supposed to be providing public good, and they not only don't provide public good, but they try to sabotage our very rights to vote in an honest election, it's preposterous. And you think about the various states, you know, including Wisconsin, you know, that these people, the fake electors, are still in positions of power. And the Republican Party not only has never apologized for it, but they've gone out of their way to double down that they have every right to do this, or that this was an anomaly, or whatever excuses they're coming up with. The only solace I've got with this is that even the Republicans are refusing to donate to the Republican Party now, because they see them as organized crime.
Yeah, that's an excellent insight. Excellent, excellent insight. And one of the tragic things here is that the fake electors are not being prosecuted. In fact, they're not being dealt with at all. And the sad thing is that Wisconsin's involvement, remember, Chesbro was from Wisconsin. I think I don't know if it was Wausau or Stevens Point, central Wisconsin, somewhere. And there is reference to a telephone call, maybe a meeting, I forget, with the chairman of the Republican Party at the time. It's mentioned in the indictment, Jack Smith's indictment in Washington. It's mentioned in Fannie Willis's. The Michigan Attorney General, to her credit, has prosecuted the fake electors there. But you're right, the fake electors here, and one of the biggest proponents of them is Ron Johnson, our senator, who never should have been our senator, but that was a bungled call, believe me, in the last Senate election. And he's going around sticking up for the fake electors. And so, and you're right, they're brazen as heck. They every right to do it and blah, blah, blah. And, but they're being prosecuted in Georgia and in Michigan. And then Trump himself is being prosecuted, obviously, in Washington, D.C. Trump is also being prosecuted in Georgia. And remember, so is Giuliani. And remember, Sidney Powell and Chesbro and the rest of them took a dive and then ratted, and they cooperated and all that. I want to get back to Georgia, however. So this crowd wants to get rid of Fannie Willis, not because she's not a great prosecutor. The first time around, their reason was she's a little light on prosecuting possession of marijuana and doctors who perform abortions. And she said, I'm not going to prosecute possession of marijuana. I only have so many staff, and I have rapes, I have burglaries, I have gang activity and drugs. That's what I'm going to prosecute. And then on doctors who perform abortions, she said, no, I'm not prosecuting them at all. For that, they were going to remove her. The Supreme Court there said on the first iteration of this legislation, well, we're not, the Supreme Court doesn't have the power to set up rules for this rump commission. And so it died. But now they're doing it without the requirement of the Supreme Court doing it. And they're going to yank her. What? Because she has a relationship with another prosecutor who's working for what we call low bono, a low hourly rate. It's his firm. and he's already gotten a number of convictions, of pleas, and he's going after Trump. That's why they want to pull him. This is a crooked deal, absolutely crooked deal. Keep that in mind. Coming up, a lot of news, a lot of weather, and Mike Johnson is doing his best to torpedo the border deal and Ukraine aid coming up.
The clouds how to cover up a clear blue sky, and the tears that I cried for that woman are gonna flood you, big river, and I'm gonna sit right here until I die.